Isn't it interesting when you see things like this and think about it? Sears has fallen below a dollar. They're now a penny stock. Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine.
At one point, they were like the place to go.
Well, when I was a kid, I had Craftsman tools.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I wanted my own tools, naturally. And Craftsman tools, when they broke, if they broke, you took them back to Sears, and they would give you a new one.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
What do you think they went wrong?
There.
Oh, they stopped doing
Stopped taking responsibility for the quality of their products and just started allowing other people to decide how good a Sears product was.
I can remember, boy, when I was a kid, first place my dad or mom would go when they needed something was
Sears.
I mean, they bought a washing machine there. They bought, you know, I think Kenmore washing machines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
That was their house brand, I think. And
Kenmore
was
everything.
I think my mom had a Maytag. I don't know. They had that. She had that washing machine for 40 years or something. It was
Kenmore was the deal.
Yeah.
Kenmore.
Was it Kenmore at Sears?
It was Kenmore. It was Craftsman. Uh-huh. And it was the brand, the American brand.
Yeah.
And then we started allowing cheap imitation products to permeate the United States marketplace.
Those porous borders, eh?
Yes, those and poor trade policies.
Yeah.
And the quality is just not the same as anyone who's used the cheap foreign steel versus American steel. There are some exceptions, obviously. There's better than American steel, German steel, perhaps Japanese steel, sword steel. But the commercial products that they sold were just inferior. And unfortunately, when the products are inferior, your brand is weakened.
Yeah.
And so the Craftsman brand was weakened, and so was the Kenmore brand. Then we decided, Sears decided, that they would just sell other people's products. They wouldn't sell their own brand, which was always viewed as top-notch.
I think this one that Home Depot has, I think it's made in China. What is it called? LG? I think they're good products. I mean, I have a...
That's
several.
Korean.
He's a Korean boy. Yeah. They're well made, though.
LG.
You know, they're not here, but boy, you know, I really like my washer and dryer I got there. Boy, it just hums right along, you know.
Yes.
Knock on wood. Wait a minute.
It's not that all foreign products are inferior, obviously.
Of course not. Koreans, they have some pretty good products. You know, cars, they do some pretty good stuff. Here's another one that's kind of gone. You remember this one? You're probably too young for this, most of you, but listen to this. See if I can.
Tonight we're going visiting at the Ronald Reagans again in their new home to see how their many wonderful electric servants are helping them, just as they'll help you, live better electrically.
Wow.
He had Alexa.
Hot. Oh, it's not.
Oh, but delicious. Everything's just right, isn't it, Patty?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
he didn't have Alexa.
Meal to make. My electric servants do everything.
Well, that's part of living better electrically.
The English muffins. My new toaster toasted them.
Wow.
I sprinkled on some grated cheese and put them in the toaster oven down here, and that melted the cheese.
Man.
The egg souffle.
That's something we haven't had in quite a while.
Oh, it's pretty tricky to make.
Yeah.
But now...
It's hilarious.
Yeah, so he didn't have Alexa. He had Jane and Patty.
The exact timing of my new automatic skillet. Well, even a souffle is easy and safe to make.
Safe?
You have mentioned the best part of the meal.
Yeah, what's that?
What do you mean?
The coffee.
Oh,
that's right.
Electric coffee pot.
Our new percolator makes the best coffee in California.
Actually, it does.
It does.
Well, that's what I mean. My electric appliances do everything.
What's Alexa's appliance?
They're all the things around the house that make mommy's work easier and run on electricity.
Oh.
Like the coffee maker, for instance.
Yes.
Is that around electricity?
Uh-huh. See the wire?
So does the toaster, and the skillet, and the refrigerator, and the washer.
Tell you what, Daddy, let's play a game.
Okay.
Let's see how many electric appliances we can find around the house.
Oh, my God.
To make it easy, we'll just start with those small appliances. That
okay, that's enough. Isn't that helpful?
Yeah, that 20-amp service.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan, what year was that?
Right.
Well, I just, you know, I hate to do this now that after saying that, do you know that General Electric used to be a $600 billion company in 2000?
Yeah.
You know what they're worth today?
$12.
$100 billion. Yeah.
$100 billion.
How do you do that?
I mean, well,
what happened to the, they lost?
You forget what
45%. Well, remember what? I guess last year was it? They said they were kind of short on cash, and their stock went down 45%. Then they lost 35% this year. It's $11 a share now. GE.
Yeah.
My goodness, that
used
to be the motherload of stocks, right?
They forgot what made them good.
Which was what, light bulbs?
Electric things. And they made some money from jet engines, too. But then I started seeing GE's name on trailer leasing.
Oh, that's when you start expanding the brand.
Yes,
boy.
Exactly. We're going to, you know, we did this very well. We made a lot of money doing it. But now we're going to go into everything else. And that's where they got in trouble with that nuclear division of theirs. And
that's called the 21 Immutable Laws of Branding. And that's the number one people mistake that people make.
Don't dilute your brand.
Don't dilute your... See, that would be like SDL or U.S. Gold Coins getting
selling
in...
Selling Krugerrands.
Selling in, or insurance or something like that.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to do insurance. Ice cream.
Yeah.
You don't do that.
Just stay out of your... If it's, stay in your lane.
They do it all the time. You know, Sears did that with insurance, too.
Indeed, they did. Yeah.
They just started to dilute the brand.
And precisely.
Yeah.
And you can't do everything well.
No.
So we specialize in American coins. It's not that I couldn't sell foreign coins.
You could sell bricks of gold if you wanted to.
But it's very hard to be an expert in every kind of coin. German coins, for example, are so much more varied, and there's so many different ones, much more than the American coin market. So just specializing in American coins is a lifelong endeavor.
You know, Apple, I guess, they've not gone far, right? It's pretty much just been computers and phones.
That's right.
Pretty much. So they're pretty smart in that regard. And I can remember John Mackey, who's a friend of mine in Whole Foods, and every time they extended their brand, and they always got in trouble. You know, they did a restaurant, they did coffee, they did vitamin. They always didn't make it. They always just took it up, you know.
Reinvent the wheel.
He was smart enough to get out of that pretty quick. He didn't lose a lot, you know.
Yeah, well, they made their reputation delivering
Whole Foods, you know.
And if they just stick to that,
Whole Foods.
Then, that everything will be fine because that was the need that the marketplace was seeking, and they found it with John Mackey and Whole Foods. So.
I wonder if a Bezos going to be, he'll be smart enough probably not to expand out too much. I mean, they're doing things like now, if you're a Prime guy, you can get sale prices just by swiping your card. That's pretty cool. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, right? And
no,
they're
not
probably going to do, you know, drones and no checkouts and stuff, I guess, as long as you have Whole Foods, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So exactly.
But now they're starting to get pounded on the whole, have you been seeing this? On the whole union thing, boy. Whole Foods people are getting together and say, we want more money.
Well,
so Jeff will probably pony up. You know?
He'll pony up as he should.
Yeah. Did you see that the government will soon be spending more on interest on the debt than the military?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that right? No, they can't get up that far.
Oh, that is. Hey.
No.
The index on, I mean, look at what's happened. 4 straight quarter point rate increase equal to a full point. And when interest rates were already at, what do you want to call them? 1-2%?
So it was about
400 billion. That's like a 30% increase in your interest cost. And it's just the beginning.
Wow.
So we add another 1 point next year. And as I pointed out, the geniuses that were in office before President Trump decided to finance all of our long-term debt at short-term. So they put the mortgage on the credit cards. They got one of those credit card things that said zero interest for let's put the mortgage on this.
Well, check this out. CBO says that in 10 years...
Yep.
There's going to be a 50% more, it's going to be like $900 billion in interest.
A year in interest. Only.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Could you imagine have $1 trillion interest payment every year?
Yeah.
How are they going to do with that? Just borrow more?
Just take all
the Good luck
the
for interest. The guy who comes in after Trump leaves if he lasts 8 years.
Well.
Or is he going to have fun? Whew.
Well, I don't
or
know.
Or she, you know.
If the president sticks true to his plan.
Right.
Believe this or not? There could actually be some money left over to pay principal on the debt by 2020.
How is that possible? He's a big spender. Come on.
I know he's a big spender.
Well, how's that going to be possible?
Infrastructure spending, and that includes rebuilding the military. So we decimated our military for 10 years.
You think?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We cut. Didn't replace. Didn't do anything to improve our military. So going in, he's got to essentially rebuild it. And once he gets up to force strength, he doesn't have to spend that kind of money every year, buy another new round of carriers,
Mm-hmm.
So I think if he makes up for the ills, I don't even want to go there. Defense spending, my goodness. Mm.
Yeah, and it's probably around trillion if you count all the dark stuff.
All right? Black stuff.
All the black stuff, you know. Yeah. The dark money.
Yes.
The dark money.
It's hidden in the defense budget.
Well, there's still $21 trillion out of the defense thing that they haven't accounted for. You know, Catherine Austin Fitz is still out there talking about that.
That she $2 claims trillion that bucks?
$20 trillion, isn't it?
Well.
I thought it was $20 trillion. No? Over 50 years?
Over, it? Yeah, over the whole,
time.
Period. But we're, recent. Very recent, $2
trillion. Yeah. And, of course, we have the famous Rumsfeld speech the day before 9/11. Wow.
Yes.
Do you remember that one?
Sure.
Tell folks about that if they don't remember. The day before 9/11, September 10th, 2001.
But it gets deeper.
Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, he comes on TV and says,
hey, we can't account for $2 trillion.
I can't believe he said that.
But here's the more curious part.
Yeah.
The wing of the Pentagon where the numbers were
is
the one that was hit by this pet airplane that nobody could find after it hit the building.
I know.
There's a, you got a bunch of GE engineers around there going, hey, where's the crankshaft of our jet engine? That's like, you know,
that's the most weirdest thing I've ever thought about. I mean, folks, think about it. I don't want to go back. I mean,
we could.
Think about it, though. When 9/11 happened, all they kept showing was these buildings being,
demolished.
Demolished. I mean, they did it 4,000 times for the last week, right?
Kept,
but did they ever go back and show you what happened to the Pentagon?
Oh, all the cameras were down.
What happened?
And we had
show
no
you
cameras.
The wreckage and show
no,
you the
no.
airplane. They didn't show anything, man.
No.
I don't know what hit that building. What do you think hit that building?
A cruise missile.
Really?
Well, that's what I think.
Yeah.
But,
certainly
what am I?
Certainly wasn't an airplane.
I'm just a dummy here.
I mean, you ever see a picture? Show me a picture of an airplane engine on the Pentagon lawn.
Yeah,
there
or
is
in
none.
The courtyard.
There
because
is none. Zero, nada, boom.
No, it disintegrated.
Not one picture.
It disintegrated, Patrick. It disintegrated.
What a scam that thing was, man.
Well,
did this thing really hit where all the paper for this $2 trillion was? Come
on.
Yes. You got a tinfoil hat on this morning?
Well, I do. It's actually double-coated tinfoil. I get the grilling stuff, because anyway.
Extra Reynolds aluminum.
Extra heavy grilling material.
That's unbelievable, man.
This is a fact. It was the accounting department of the Pentagon that was hit by that plane, Which made it, and incidentally, the World Trade Center, Building 7, that contained all the SEC records for, remember, WorldCom.
I know you told us that.
All those other,
every one of the SEC records.
Every one of them gone.
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 And
oops.
That's proven, not conspiracy.
No.
That thing was.
It's just a,
it was
a, it was a terrible coincidence.
It was a controlled demolition. I mean, it's been proven.
I don't know about proving. I'm just saying.
The guy's taped the owner. He said, I think we need to pull it.
He was talking about pulling the people out of the building.
He heard him explain it.
What's the matter with you? You conspiracy?
I can show you.
I think you got your tinfoil hat
on. I can show you 20,000 architects to tell you that thing was a controlled demolition.
Forgive me, folks.
It went down as a pancake, and they said it was because of all this furniture was on fire.
I get in trouble with my sarcasm than anything else. My remarks sometimes drip sarcasm. And the person that came running into my building on the 12th, and I had civil engineers come behind them, but the first person that came to my building was a dear, dear friend of mine, a welder named Bill Briggs, who the most non-political guy you ever want to meet. All he cared about was race cars and welding. That was it. That was his thing. Don't talk to him about politics. Forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are with football. Well, that was Briggs. And Bill came knocking on my door. He's like, Andy, you don't believe this, do you? There's no way. And he went on about the melting temperature of steel and how he worked on the Trade Tower. No way a box beam was cut in half by an airplane. He just went on.
Not even close.
And this is a guy whose opinion I respect, not a scientist, a welder, for goodness sake, but the best welder in the region. So, if the welder, who deals with steel every day, had doubts that, and he knew the burning temperature of jet fuel and the melting temperature of steel, like he spouted them off like they were in his bloodstream. How hot you have to get steel. He pointed to his truck. He had this big, giant rig with every sort of welding equipment. He said, you wouldn't believe what I need to do to cut a steel beam in half, and he want to take me out and show me how sophisticated the equipment is to cut steel. And if he could burn it with jet fuel, he'd do that. So anyway, I was leery from day one. And then, of course, when Building 7, which was not hit by any airplanes, was pulled, whatever you want to say, it fell as well.
Right into its own footprint, just...
And curiously,
flat down.
It fell on the BBC before.
I know.
It fell on... it fell in. Yeah, 30 minutes before, the BBC's reporting that this building fell.
And they could see it in the background.
And I'm sitting here looking at it, yeah.
Unbelievable.
There are too many problems like that, and I only wish we would have spent as much time and money investigating that as we did the Monica Lewinsky scandal.
Or the Russian thing,
or any of this other stuff. But the commission, I love this, the head of Pakistan Security, ISS, Mahmoud, I believe was the general's name, gave $100,000 to the terrorists. They had the links on his bank. Well, yeah. Terrorists, listen to me. Am I brainwashed? The gentleman who hijacked the planes. Anyway, the chairman of the commission said, well, we didn't think it made any sense to investigate where the money for these hijackers came from because they could have gotten it anywhere. That's what he said.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of rumors going around saying that it's someday... President Trump is going to say to Saudi Arabia, you owe us a lot for 9/11 and wants the money.
Yeah.
And maybe he's building up to that. You know, maybe King, he
you're
is.
You're going
to
have to pay.
You're going to have to pay because, I mean, I think they've proven that the dudes that flew that plane.
They were all Saudis.
They were
right?
all Saudis, yeah. They proved
well, the majority
that.
Of them yeah. were, yeah.
Whoever yeah. they are. Well,
hey, you know, I think that's something.
It's a terrible thing in this country to have this go on like it is.
Yes.
You know, without people really knowing the
national
truth.
National security.
Just band. Terrible. Just terrible.
FISA courts, the Patriot Act, all of that stuff stemmed from 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that they would have a secret judge's chamber in which you could have secret wiretaps, searches and seizures. Without due process, all of that came from 9/11. That's the legislation we got.
Every time I go into an airport and take off my belt, take off my shoes, that it just flashed that this never would have happened if they wouldn't have, done this 9/11.
Yeah, but I don't object to that. You know, I'm okay
really?
With the security. Yeah.
Nice.
If you're going to get on a plane with me and maybe my family and
maybe
300
so.
Other people, yeah, then is it unreasonable to expect that you don't have a bomb or gun or something on you? Well... No, I don't think.
Well,
it's
I see, but I mean, if they make you walk through that thing, mm-hmm. which I don't do, I do it the hand thing. Mm. Why do you have to take off your belt and your shoes and all that stuff? That thing will see it. I mean, they
right?
just do that just to kick your ass,
just to give you a hard time,
just to give you a hard time.
Maybe.
That's what I resent.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I resent more the fact that you could target one of my fellow Americans based on their political affiliations and surveil them. It's that government. Intrusion into our lives for whatever reason they see fit. Okay, he's your political opponent. Yeah, that's bad enough. But what about someone who's not your political opponent?
Yeah.
What about someone who tackles your son in a football game and you're mad now? Oh, he deprived me of winning this championship, so now I'm going to make his life miserable. I'm going to use this whole government apparatus to attack this person that I view as my enemy. That really, to me, is much more offensive and egregious than any other security measure taken. All of these FISA courts and secret warrants and private wiretaps and unmasking of surveillance. I mean, all of that is the result of the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Which, as soon as they named it the Patriot Act, I was suspicious.
And the thing was all written, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was ready to go. Exactly.
Jeez.
Never let a good crisis go to waste.
I just hope we as a culture, as a people, don't have to reap some kind of weird karma for being so stupid.
Me too.
You know what
I mean? Respect the Constitution.
I'm concerned about that.
These people that were so oppressed knew the roots of their oppression. The secret courts, the quartering of troops, the taxes without any representation whatsoever. Mm-hmm. All of these things were... I mean, they sat down, wrote a piece of paper. This is what we object to. Mm-hmm. And they listed the things. These are the things we're going to put in place to make sure that they've never happen again. And it only took 200 years. We've eroded. I mean, the money, first thing, that's the one that absolutely hits home for me. The debasing of the dollar. The idea that our forefathers understood paper money, and they did, as I've demonstrated on the show with the assignats and the South Sea Bubble and the tulip mania, all of the financial scandals that erupted before we ever picked up a musket at Lexington and Concord, all of that was well known in world history. So when our forefathers sat down and wrote the Constitution in Article 1, before they ever got to the amendments, they said, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. They said states can't do it, the federal government can't do it, no one can do it. Gold and silver are money, that's it. Everything else is a promise to pay, and it's not going to be used as our money system. And it worked fine for nearly 200 years, from 1776 until 1971. Then once they cut the standard of what a dollar was,
boom,
there it went. That one protection in the Constitution took everything else out with it. Then it was just a matter of eliminating the those pesky amendments. First, hate speech. Second, you're right, you don't have a right to have a gun. Third, and so on. Fourth, we'll have a secret court. You don't need due process. Just one right after another, they've stripped away the very basic things that were put in our Constitution to protect us against this sort of government. And look where we are.
Probably another reason why the globalists don't like constitutionalists like Kavanaugh.
Or me.
Or you, because you guys think the Constitution's an important thing.
It's a pesky document.
Pesky document.
It's in the way of everything they want to do. And it's certainly in the way of global governance. Mm-hmm. So
you ever hear of the First Amendment?
Never.
Never? Yeah. Do you ever? I don't even know who this guy is, but I just got a little clip here. Kanye West? He's some.
I love Kanye. So Kanye West, you know what? I hate his music, by the way.
Oh, is that what he is? Is he a musician?
He's a musician. I've often said he's horrible. His music is horrible. I can name 20
but
other artists.
But he's very
artists.
Popular, right?
All of a sudden.
Very popular.
This black man, rap artist, married to Kim Kardashian, comes out and says, Trump isn't wrong. Well, he's right.
Check this out. He has an interview here
from
audio from a video on TMZ, which is a wildly popular, sleazy website, but billions
of gossip column thing,
kind of like a National Enquirer online.
Yeah.
And here is the interviewer interviewing Kanye West, who has a MAGA hat on.
They're telling him to take his hat off.
I would love it, Kanye, if you would not wear that hat. It would make me and a lot of other people feel better. In fact, why don't we say, please take off the hat, Kanye? How's that?
Is that good?
KMA.
No, because you have a right to wear it.
But I have a right to express my view on it. I am American, and I support and give my ideas and support and brilliance to whoever ends up in office. That's my stance as an American. I support our president. Bottom line, no matter who they are. As an American, I support our president. Now, I already told you what this represents for me. This represents y'all can't bully me.
Now, don't you think it's just like the weirdest thing ever that an interviewer would tell somebody to take off a hat that says something like, Make America great again. That's a terrible thing?
No, absolutely.
Wow.
You know, Kanye's
isn't that
old
sicko?
Yeah, you remember when I quoted Frederick Douglass, right?
I can't believe he said that.
I quoted Frederick Douglass as saying that the limits of tyrants are prescribed by those whom they oppress.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, we Kanye put that as a show page title.
Kanye West says slavery was a choice. Oh, my goodness, did they pillory him for that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what do you mean slavery was a choice? Well, you're going to put up with it. It's you. It's not the guy that's oppressing you. So he was effectively paraphrasing Frederick Douglass. And so for me, I want to emphasize again, I hate his music. But just like when Howard Stern, another person who I don't agree with their views, he was told, oh, you can't say that on the radio. Do you remember all that?
Mm-hmm.
He actually put out a CD called Banned by the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so in agreement with him that I went out and bought that CD.
Did you really?
I despise his humor, and I just think it's, what do they call that, sophomoric?
It's just
the bathroom, worst kind of bathroom humor. Right. But you're not going to stop him from saying that. And, you know, I've gotten into trouble myself with this idea that in America, you're free to be a racist. You're free to be stupid. You're free to be a bigot. You're free to do whatever makes your boat float. If you want to live a life of hate, that's your business. And I don't think anyone should be shaming you or putting you down for it, or at least suggesting, at very worst suggesting, you don't have a right to hold that opinion. So I'm in agreement. I find myself with strange bedfellows indeed. I am in full agreement with Kanye West and will support him, you know, as much as a white, urban, middle-aged man can support a young black rapper. He's totally out of my culture, but he is so correct. He shouldn't be bullied if that's his belief. You know, I've seen quite a bit of the opposite type of sentiment expressed in these songs and in these artists' opinions. And yes, do I agree with him? Boy, did I disagree with the previous president. But did I support him as our president? Hell yeah. You bet I did. And I would do that, whoever, Bill Clinton, I don't care who the president is. Once he's my president, he's my president. I've never said Obama's not my president. That was absurd. The idea that he was not my president was absurd. So I didn't agree with his policies, but I supported him as my president. I would expect the other side to do the same thing. It's going to come around again, as it always does. It always does. And so when it does, will you expect me to play fair again? Yes, I will. I pledge that I will. And 4 years from now, 6 years from now, when a new president comes in and is not one of mine, well, he's one of yours. Okay, that's the way it works. We try a little of that. That didn't work. We're going to try this. So we did the socialist, Democrat, high regulation, high taxes, open borders, free trade thing. We did that. It's not like we didn't try it. We tried it. We signed NAFTA, the giant sucking
the
sound.
The Paris Treaty.
Exactly.
The UN.
We tried. And at some point, I decided, as a great many other Americans did, that doesn't work. You know the best explanation that I heard of why, even though the media was predicting that Hillary was going to win, why Donald Trump won? Because, you ready? I hope you are sitting down. Everyone, please take a seat. Because Americans are afraid to admit that they're bigots.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, they wouldn't just tell a pollster. They wouldn't admit that they're a bigot. They would wait until they're in the voting booth, then they vote for Trump and prove that they're a bigot. See? That's the logic that they attach to it.
Well, that's weird.
That is weird. Mm.
I always liked your stance that if people have a problem with the Second Amendment or First Amendment,
repeal
whatever,
it.
Just go ahead, you know.
There's a mechanism.
You know, or if you have a problem with the Supreme Court justice, put your dude in, the president, and let him pick the one that you want.
Yes.
That's the deal. That's what I'd like to hear the president say. I mean, you can agree or disagree with, I don't know, with this whole thing that's going on with Kavanaugh, but put your person in and let him appoint one. That's the way it works.
Well, if you remember,
not whining about the one that goes in.
When Antonin Scalia was discovered with a pillow over his head, dead, just in the closing days of President Obama's term. And, right?
Didn't even talk about
that. Let's not go there. But let's say, okay, now there's an opening, and the Senate says, no, we're not going to confirm Supreme Court justice until the new president comes in. And that is the basis for their resentment. Why didn't you let us pick our Supreme Court justice when President Obama was president?
Because you killed the other dude. That's
No. Let's not go
well,
there.
He had a pillow over his head.
He did.
Somebody killed him.
There was no autopsy, though, so we can't determine his cause of death. But let's assume he died.
And who's the person that made the decision not to have an autopsy?
Doesn't matter. He died of natural causes, and so now he's dead. And it's up to the president to pick the new Supreme Court justice with advice and consent of the Senate. And the fact that the Senate was in opposite hands allowed them to stall the president's choice. They resent that. And this is why they pulled out all of the stops on this Supreme Court nominee. As Chuck Schumer said, I don't care who he is. I'm opposed to him right out of the box. Doesn't matter. So I say again, though, that President Trump should have most definitely picked Hillary Clinton to be the next Supreme Court justice.
You are so silly.
I would have said, yeah, I nominate Hillary Clinton. Let's get her up here on Capitol Hill and let's do some hearings. Oh, my goodness.
After Kavanaugh, he's going to have a chance to do another one? I guess probably so.
No. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
How old is she? She's about 80, right?
She's 85, I think.
Yeah.
But I saw a good comment online, I thought it was, that she will... She's not going to retire. She will outlive him.
Oh, yeah, she's just going to.
Out of spite.
She's just going to take time pollen, you know, every day.
There's no way. Yeah, you can bet Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to be doing her best to live as long as she possibly can.
They're going to wheel her in, boy.
Yeah, whatever we have to, I'm not going to quit. And God bless her for that.
Oh, yeah, I don't blame her. I would do the same thing.
Hang in there, Ruth.
What's the general inflation outlook? Writes an emailer now that King Bezos has upped the ante and gifted his serfs a token of his appreciation for helping make him the wealthiest net worth dude on the earth. When do you expect the last piece of the puzzle, wages, will finally kick in?
Yeah, it's here. It's here. That was like the kickoff, you know.
It's going to be the real kickoff, right?
Yeah, that is
the kickoff. Because you know Walmart and everybody else is going
to has to.
They got to, right?
If they don't, all of their best workers are going to leave and go to Amazon.
Sure.
That's just what's going to happen.
Going to happen, yeah.
So they're going to have to raise theirs. And
Home Depot,
everybody. And then everyone around the Walmart is going to have to raise theirs. And, you know, the once we reach that level of full employment, where the only way you're going to get a worker is to steal them from somebody else, how are you going to do that?
Pay him more money.
Pay him more money. Gosh, that's the beauty of this president's plan.
That is inflationary, though. But,
oh,
so you got to live with that.
That's and remember, I said we would have inflation, no doubt about it.
Sure.
But it's not so bad when everybody's working. In fact,
that's true.
If we plug the inflation tax in and replace the income tax, I know that's inflationary, too. If we just said, okay, federal government needs $3 trillion a year to survive, let them just create $3 trillion, put it into circulation, and reduce the value of every other dollar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. This is great. Jasper says, I've heard Andrew talk about just taking over the Fed, not auto the Fed,
and
print the nationalize and just print the money themselves. Could a president just take over the Fed and just create $21 trillion and pay off the national debt?
Well, he used to be able to until the Democrats revoked that legislation.
But, I mean, just to say he could.
He could, yeah.
What would that do?
What would that do, really?
Wouldn't that be so massively inflationary? Or
instantly.
I don't know.
Instantly.
So that, let me see. You would take $21 trillion.
I would create $21 trillion.
And you'd be paying off all of the people that you owe.
No.
China, you'd pay China.
Hold on.
Okay.
We create $21 trillion in United States notes.
Okay.
Direct obligations of the Treasury.
Right.
Then we tell the people, if you have a Federal Reserve note, bring it in and exchange it for a United States note.
What?
Right? So you bring in your $100 Federal Reserve note.
Oh, you mean a paper dollar.
A paper or electronic one. Doesn't matter.
Okay, I'm with you. Go ahead.
Tie it to the postal system the way the Germans do, by the way. The infrastructure's in place.
So I could take my...
Go to the post office. You bring them your $100 account. Here's my account at Chase or J.P. Morgan, wherever.
And I want U.S. notes?
I want an account with U.S. notes in it at the post office. So that would be a Treasury obligation now that you have an account with the equal amount of United States notes in it. For better illustrative purposes, let's imagine the physical paper. You go into the post office, you hand them your $100 Federal Reserve note. with the green seal and the words Federal Reserve Note at the top. They hand you a $100 United States note with a red seal and the words United States Note at the top.
I want some of those.
Okay, so you trade your $100 Federal Reserve notes in it. And what will happen is the post office will get a pile of these Federal Reserve notes. They'll put them on a pallet, put them on the next mail truck, send them right to Washington.
Okay.
Now, Washington gets all of these Federal Reserve notes for which it's issued United States notes, so it simply replaced it. They hand them over to the Federal Reserve banks. Here are your Federal Reserve notes. Give us our interest-bearing bonds back.
Okay, I'm with you. All right.
Now, what is our interest cost? Zero.
Yeah, but the Fed only has $2 trillion in notes.
Yeah. Right. Then they'll have to do something else because.
But I mean, we have $21 trillion in debt.
They'll have a lot more than $2 trillion in notes once we give them all the Federal Reserve notes that we've gathered up in exchange for United States notes.
Right. And then what is the Fed going to do with all these Federal Reserve notes?
Pay not off? Not our business. They're a private entity. Whatever they do with them is their business. What's our business is give us back our bonds.
But we only have $2 trillion there, right?
Well, we have $2 trillion there. We have $4 trillion in Social Security and then foreigners.
Oh, okay.
Of course, let the foreigners settle up with the Federal Reserve banks, whatever they have.
Oh.
That's between them and
so
the
you
Federal
could, Reserve. You could get rid of almost all of that, the debt that way, couldn't
certainly,
you?
Certainly. Certainly could. Hmm. If a nation can issue a
is
dollar...
That, is that inflationary?
Well...
Let's see.
If you're replacing the existing supply,
not really,
with a new supply, it's just the only difference is it says United States.
So it's really not inflationary because you're taking, you're sucking out the Fed notes, putting in the U.S. notes. I like this.
You should.
I like it.
It's the Chicago plan.
It's the Chicago plan. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to take full credit for this.
That's very interesting. Now, how would you though? How could I go up and say I have $700 in my Chase account in Dripping Springs? Well,
I want to open a federal account at the U.S. Postal Service.
God, what a mess. Can you imagine going to the post office?
Yeah, but the
thing
is,
you'd have to maybe start your own little banks.
There's one in every town already
existing.
That's true.
And I could take my little bank account in there, and they're going to give me a $700 account with the U.S. notes?
With the U.S. Treasury.
Yeah.
With the U.S. notes. The sub-treasury system. All of this, of course, would have to fly. Yeah, it would have to fly under the Treasury. It couldn't be part of the Federal Reserve system.
Wow. Man, you think old Chase and Wells Fargo be getting their panties in a wad over this?
I think they might.
Yeah, I think. Ooh.
I mean,
I like it, though. I like it.
If you go out wherever you live in in this great country, whoever you are, you go out and you find the biggest building in town. Guarantee you
Federal Reserve Bank
to a bank.
You bet. Or a cancer center. Probably close up to the cancer complexes. Right?
Not yet.
Wow. That's a great plan. That's a Chicago plan, huh?
Yeah, the Chicago plan was simply to make the Treasury the wellspring of money, require the Federal Reserve banks to maintain 100% reserves. So if you have $100 deposit in the bank, they have to have $100 on hand ready to give to you the moment that you come to the bank and ask for it. So it requires them to keep 100% reserves. Well, where are they going to get these reserves how are they going to loan money? How are they going to, well, they can borrow money from the Treasury, the wellspring of money, and then pay the federal government interest instead of the other way around.
Wow. I
mean, that is our money. And the idea that we've handed the use of that money over to the Federal Reserve Bank cartel and then allow them to create the money and loan it to us at interest, that if that doesn't strike you as patently unfair, then perhaps you're not understanding what's going on. They loan the government money that they create. The federal government does not create it per se. They might print it, but it's the Federal Reserve that puts it into circulation at interest by loaning it to the government and to individuals through their member banks. That whole cartel is enormously profitable. They're making hand over fist. So taking that power and profit center back and putting it into the Treasury would definitely reduce the tax burden on American citizens.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you could extinguish to 21
trillion,
and then you're talking about 500 trillion off, you know, expenses, and then if you then could start building up Social Security because that money's been paid off.
Sure.
You could, and have tariffs, you could dump the tax system all together.
Income tax immediately.
Yeah,
you
and then
dump it.
Whenever you need short dollars, you just create it.
That's correct.
Which is then a very fair tax.
Worked for Abraham Lincoln.
Right. Well, for a while.
Worked for John Kennedy.
Until they popped him.
Yeah.
God. Okay, I'm voting for you.
Thanks, I'm not running.
Are you on a Libertarian candidate?
Thanks.
You're not running.
I'm not running.
But I want to.
No, okay, I'll back anyone who wants to take
Jack
those
says,
proposals.
Jack says, how can an individual set up a trust fund and manage the fund themselves? All the commercials are telling me to buy gold and silver to hedge, protect, preserve, etc. my wealth. Which type of gold and silver should I use in horse trading aspects? Are these coins that are being sold really worth anything? They tell me to get out of the fiat money and buy gold and silver, but if fiat money were really that bad, then why take my paper money and
exactly.
you give me gold?
Exactly.
All you're telling
you
me
my paper
is
money?
Why is that yeah. fiat dollar? Are you telling me that, let's see, all you are telling me is that my fiat dollars is okay, why not take another form of payment other than fiat dollars?
Yeah, no.
So what's Jack saying?
So if you look at the Chicago plan there, well, I'll sum it up like this. Yeah. If these coins are so good, why are you selling them to me, right?
For fiat currency.
Yeah, that's what Jack's saying.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the bulk, you know, the Krugerrands and all that stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and that what should you buy, Jack? I'm a fan of lawful American money.
It's a different thing. Gold, you're getting
and
real
silver
money
coins, yeah.
In exchange rather than a Krugerrand or something.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Or a Maple Leaf or a brick of Credit Suisse or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the plan that I just laid out, however, would also be a fiat system. Unlike typical libertarians, specifically from the von Mises school, the Ron Paul brand of libertarian, I'm not opposed to a government-issued fiat money. I just think if we're going to issue money for profit, then that profit should accrue to the people of the United States and not to the private banks. This is where I run into my socialist friends on the left.
Yeah.
This is how come I can get along with the LaRouche crowd and the Ron Paul crowd. I have to stand in the middle. I understand the libertarian maxims of money, and that should be private and subject to the laws of fraud, has nothing to do with the government. Mm-hmm. But the idea that the federal government can give the monopoly power to issue money to a banking cartel, and they would do that for profit and then keep the profit for themselves, that just doesn't
sit. Boy, the flexibility and the power of what that Chicago plan.
Mm-hmm.
Who put that out?
I think it was Charles Fisher.
Uh-huh.
In
how
1929. The summer of 29.
Well, that was only
months before the Depression, the crash, where they proved themselves indispensable. I really think that intellectual folks who understand the system were looking at that Chicago plan saying, yeah, why aren't we doing it like this?
So that was only 100 years after the Federal Reserve.
Correct. Wow. It was less than 100 years, Patrick. Fisher. 1913 and 1929. That's what gave us the Roaring Twenties.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Well,
as soon as the Federal Reserve got the power in 1913 to issue money, they started issuing it hand over fist.
Yeah.
And so all this extra money in circulation, what did that cause the economy to do? To roar. That's what gave us the Roaring Twenties.
But we had a lot of fun, man.
Boy, we did.
We danced.
Oh,
a lot of gin.
Cute Florida
girls.
Land boom.
What can I say, man?
Yeah, man. Everybody was making money.
Yeah, thanks.
Every kind
My
of
Uncle
company.
Uncle Tony, boy, he was making bathtub gin, too.
Goldman Sachs was doing the Shenandoah Trust and all these sorts of investment vehicles that were
what a party.
Outlandish.
What a
party. It was a party. And then, boom. Just the very thing they were put in place.
Boom.
To eliminate, which was the unbridled creation of money without any backing, was the very thing that they did. And rather than charge them with fraud and deal with that aspect of it, we simply legalized their behavior and said to the American citizenry, you're not allowed to ask these banks to give you the gold coins that they're supposed to have. You're just going to take their paper money as though it were gold coins.
Wow.
And silver coins.
Can you look up the Could I Google Fisher Chicago Plan and read that whole thing?
Probably.
Is it on there? How do you spell it? Is it just
F-I-S-C-H-E-R?
C-H-E-R.
Fisher Chicago Plan should be enough.
Should be on Google's, yeah.
Yeah, I would guess. Yeah,
and he laid the whole thing out, just like you
did. He laid it out pretty well, yeah.
I'll be darned.
Maybe not as succinctly, but, you know, if you can read the aspects.
Of course, you just told us the plan, so I guess you don't even have to read it. Pretty cool.
That's right.
Pretty cool. Okay, but we missed Jack's first point. Is it viable, or how can somebody set up an individual trust fund and manage the fund themselves?
There's
so many trusts, or a million.
Yeah, right. That's tax law, and I don't want to stick my nose in there, except to say you have to consult a tax professional. But when you put your money already taxed into gold and silver coins and then keep them in your possession, it's a passive income generator. It doesn't require annual reporting. There's no gains for you to report each year. You simply hold the coins until the end of the term, as long as you want to hold them, and then you sell them.
And then you pay taxes on the profit.
And you pay taxes on the gains on your regular income tax.
And what's the advantage of a trust, Jackson?
Well, it files a separate return and generally has a separate tax rate and is not attachable according to the debt of the beneficiary. And I think in general rules, however, as far as the IRS is concerned, an IRA, for example, is a perfect example of a trust, statutory, that is prohibited from owning rare American coins. It just can't buy them. It's not allowed. But as I understand it, and again, I'm not a tax professional, a defined benefit plan in which the benefit at the end of the term is defined and in which the beneficiary cannot tell the trustee how to invest the funds wouldn't be a self-directed plan and would therefore be eligible to own rare coins. This would be for a substantial portfolio because the cost of establishing that trust will run you into the multiple thousands.
Really? Yeah. So is it worthwhile for people who do own numismatic coins? What would be the case where they'd want to stuff them into a trust? But you can do it if you have the money to set up the trust. And the benefit is nobody can attach it. Somebody falls on your sidewalk and wants to sue you or something. That money's safe. Those coins are safe. Is that right?
That's what they tell me.
Yeah, yeah. But who knows? Huh?
Possession is 9/10 of the law. So that's the reality of the situation. Do you need a trust when property doesn't have to be titled in order to be sold? Coins are a bearer investment.
Like a bearer bond.
Correct.
Whoever owns them, they
Whoever
own
has them owns
Whoever
them.
Whoever has them owns them.
That's it.
Well, then in theory, you're not doing anything illegal if you had gold and silver numismatic coins, burying them in the backyard and not telling anybody.
Correct.
Not illegal. Well, you would if you had to fill out a financial form under penalty of perjury.
That's right. Wait, let me count my wealth. So there's a $20 gold piece.
Oh, okay.
$20.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a $3 gold piece.
Could you really do that?
$3. Here's a $5 gold piece.
Could you really do that?
Sure you can.
Legally?
That's legal tender, man.
Wow.
Hey, if I want to take a $20 gold piece and go down to my local Chase bank and deposit it in my savings
give you 20
account,
bucks,
it's 20 bucks. They'll do it. Absolutely.
Woo.
That's the law.
Woo.
Legal tender.
Woo.
I can't do that with an ounce of gold, but I can do that with a $20 gold piece.
So you can legally...
I could swear on a stack of Bibles.
And not be outside the law.
I've just counted my money.
Wow.
And here's what I have, $23.
Wow.
I have this $20 gold piece and this $3 gold piece. That's my
pretty
money.
Amazing when you think about that.
Well,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it? And so say if you want to jump on a plane and go to Costa Rica and plant marijuana, and you had one coin worth $100,000, and they ask you to put the amount of money you have in your pocket, you say $20?
Well, I would pull out the coin and read it.
Yeah.
Read it to the guy.
I would say, what does that say?
What is this? What does that say right there?
$20.
$20. Okay. Back in my pocket.
Whoa. Okay. Are you sure about that?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're not giving...
I'm not giving any sort of advice.
Legal advice.
I'm pointing out that $20 gold piece is legal tender. And what if the gentleman in Costa Rica says, the hell with your legal tender. I'm taking this. And I'm going to go sell it on the black market. Generally, he's going to have a gun. You want to argue with him? Go ahead. I don't. I'm not going to Costa Rica. I'm not flying anywhere. I'm staying right here.
I got you.
And in this country, a $20 gold piece is legal tender under the law. any additional value assigned to it is purely arbitrary. Otherwise, we're going to have to admit that a $20 gold piece and a $20 bill are not the same thing. They're the same thing. Otherwise, the Constitution is being violated daily. So at law, it's called a legal fiction. Any lawyers out there can attest for us. Legal fiction is that there is no difference at law between a $20 bill and a $20 gold piece. They're the same
thing. I love
thing.
That legal fiction thing. Isn't it cool?
I do too. Isn't it great? Because it always works against us.
Yeah.
Here's one time when it can work for you.
Here's a question for Andrew from Dennis. If one had a piece of land and wanted to put a house to live in themselves, would a prefab be as good as a stick-built structure?
I love the prefab.
I know you're a big prefab guy.
Yeah.
But aren't they just filled with a lot of weird chemical?
Could be.
You know, you'd
just
have to
like
be careful,
your stick-built
right?
house could be the same,
same thing.
Way.
Yeah.
But if you study the history of manufacturing, you know, when there used to be the coach builders who would sit by hand and put together the car for you, and every car was a different, you know,
sure,
and it was all handcrafted, meticulously done, one piece at a time, and it would take forever. And then Henry Ford said, well, let's just move this car down the line. Everybody gets there. You put the wheels on, you put the seats in, and everybody gets pretty good at putting wheels on and putting seats in. So you gain production economies. So pretty soon you're cranking out a Model T every minute, whereas before it might have taken 30 minutes, same number of people working. So the economies of scale that are given from mass production suggest that it's the perfect place for prefab housing. I mean, what do we spend on a typical construction site? Got to get to the site, set up the tools, and blah, blah, blah. Otherwise, we have a factory in which things are running through here, and then they're running out in boxes that are then put together on the site, and you have a prefab house. Heck yeah. I'm a big fan of manufactured housing. It doesn't have to be a square little box. You can put multiple boxes together and get as architecturally sophisticated as you want.
I know that they've got some pretty cool real log cabins with real wood.
Sure.
That it worked the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get yourself a pretty cool little structure that's very natural.
You don't have to build it. You put it together.
Just put it together, man.
That's
right. Just put it together.
And so,
I mean, you need is a slab, right?
Yeah. So all of the carrying costs are transferred to the manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a manufacturer. I'm cranking out these houses. You tell me I want to buy a house. Great. I'll have it on your lot in 3 days. It'll be assembled in 5. That's how long you got to carry the interest.
Wow.
As opposed to a stick built. Oh, I'm going to go borrow the money. I'm going to give half of it to the builder. He's going to take 6 months, 8 months, a year where I can't live in the house. He's building it. I'm paying interest on the money, or I'm not getting the use of the money. When you add it all together, a pre-manufactured, prefabricated.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I just had a vision here. You could get a couple acres of land in Dripping Springs, an hour from Austin,
right,
where it's easy to get into because you're going against the traffic. I mean, against it, right?
Right.
At the times, you're going in at 8 o'clock and everybody's going the other way. Wow, you could do the little cabins and rent those suckers out for $1,500 a month. Man, you got yourself a little business there.
Absolutely.
I think
right.
I just become a business tycoon, right? Well,
sure.
And I mean, you really could do that.
Don't know who it is in your part of the country, but in the Mid-South, it's Jim Walter Homes. So they prefab, pre-manufacture these houses. You bring them, you put them on your lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're up and ready to rent or
live. Yeah, I mean, all you
got to
do is you could do rainwater and septical system, and you're good to go, right?
As sophisticated as you want to be.
I'll be done.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, if I didn't have anything else to do, I'd do that, but I didn't.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Can you please ask Andy to give us his take on presidential emergency drill that was rescheduled from last
week
to today?
Yeah.
And it's really a test or the real deal of some. Yeah, so I'm glad he brought this up because it was going to be last week, and this was something that they were going to tweet out to how many million people?
Yeah, President Trump loves tweeting so much.
He's going to tweet to, 150 million or so?
Everybody's cell phone's going to get a tweet from the president,
today?
Whether you have Twitter or not.
Today.
I'm so excited, I can hardly wait. I'm making sure my phone is charged.
This is a test.
Of the emergency
broadcast.
If this
system,
were an actual test,
the ban on prayer in schools would be lifted.
That's
right. this.
That's good. That's a good one.
If there's an actual emergency.
So here in the Northeast, primarily in the Bergen County, New Jersey, with a population of 1 million,
yeah,
in one county, the way that we notify people of emergencies here is with giant sirens.
Oh yeah.
These sirens, sure, so sure. They go off for the fire and for every other thing. And people have asked, in this day and age, why can't you just send a text to everybody? So we put in this system called the Nixle Alerts, mm-hmm, and you sign up for it. And if there's an emergency, they just send you a text automatically. And they are now taking this to the federal level, presumably to warn us if there's some serious national catastrophe that we need to know about instantly. And we don't want the news to be able to spin it any way they want. So we're going to just communicate directly with the people.
Good for them.
That's something the president has really been after.
Yeah, thank. And what if he gets that? What if he gets that list in the middle of the night? What he could do with that?
Yeah, he's going to start tweeting. I hope that there are some strict penalties for.
Oh, I'm sure he won't.
For political use or sure. private use. Mm-hmm. But how long will it be before some corrupt politician decides to use this system?
Or somebody in China hacks it or something, yeah, somewhere, not China, but you know.
So
and then all
the
of a sudden say,
or,
you know, the yeah. aliens have landed and, you right. know, why?
Whatever.
Whatever.
I'm you know, much as I love the president, this is one of those instances where I say.
Shouldn't be messing around with
it. It shouldn't have that kind of power, man. Shouldn't have it. The ability to just talk to everybody or push a message to everyone's phone.
How many cell phones are there?
There's a lot of cell phones.
I saw the number.
I think
number.
There's more than there are people.
Oh, right? Yeah, I bet so.
It's absurd.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Because I know, like, how many 13-year-olds have these things? They're not registered to vote.
All right.
They don't show up in the count. So it's a system that's ripe for abuse. Much as I'm all about, you know, keep in touch. Yeah. I don't think this is a power that should be given to any president.
Eric says the Pentagon figure is over $8 trillion now, which is more money than they were budgeted. You mean there are $8 trillion that they can't account for?
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder which tin horn dictator with gold bathroom fixtures, you know, that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Aluminum airplanes cannot slice into a building. These videos are, what? GCI? Absolute
yeah.
fakes, basic physics, wings should have sheared off, no planes, no Muslim hijackers. What is GCI?
CGI.
CGI.
Computer generated images.
Do you think they were, is that possible?
Well, this is what the writer is suggesting, and that
no.
I guess that is possible.
Really?
I just know that my welding friend had serious problems with the same sorts of physics that the writer is describing. You think about how thin the skin of an airplane
that they
is.
Just, the wings would just...
What do they do? Yeah, they...
Well, I don't know.
Well, the airframe, these are, again, questions for a metallurgist. And the next group of people that I encountered were engineers and scientists for 9/11
oh,
Truth.
Oh, yeah, you go right? there, boy. You go down some
oh,
black
my.
Holes, you go, ooh.
These are all civil engineers and, you know, people with advanced degrees in metallurgy and civil whatever. That's their thing, is building infrastructure. And, you know, when they put up the Empire State Building, they contemplated. And then, sure enough, in World War II, a bomber flew right into
no
the
kidding.
Building. Yeah.
What happened
Look
to
that
it?
Up. Well, that's a good question. What happened to this bomber that flew into the building? And now we advance avionics.
The building
to the
didn't fall down or anything?
It didn't burn. Mm. It didn't collapse into its own footprint.
It didn't.
And then there's that one, and I think it was in Madrid. A skyscraper burned for like 60 hours
right.
or something, yeah. and still didn't fall down. When they were building the World Trade Center, they most definitely thought about airplanes hitting it. They most definitely did. And designed it accordingly. And so to all of these scientists and engineers, of which I am neither, I have to respect a guy who's gone to school for 4 or 8 years and studied that discipline enough to get a PhD or a doctorate in physics or in, you know, metallurgy or whatever they do. These are trained professionals. When they get together in a group and dispute official findings, I have to pay attention. And they don't have an axe to grind. If they're suggesting that what the official report is describing is physically impossible, then I have to take notice. I have to respect science. That's what I'm told. Mm-hmm. You know, 97% of scientists agree that this or that. So you have to pay attention.
But don't you? I think you're being a bit hypocritical because you don't respect science when they say your high blood pressure medicine that you're not taking is going to make you better.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
I'm just kidding.
No, yes, I do. I respect that science. Sure.
But you don't just want
How are you going to lower my blood pressure? How are you going to lower it?
Well, they have insulin pill. That's
I can lose weight, too, by cutting off my arm. Doesn't mean I'm going to do that. I don't want to take the risk that you're suggesting I take to reduce my blood pressure. So I can. My heart is told by my, and correct me anytime here because I'm way out of my depth, okay? So my heart is told by my liver and my kidneys to beat faster and send more blood so that we can fight whatever or remove this waste from the body.
Kinda.
That's as I understand it.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
So what the doctors are saying, well, we'll just interrupt that, communicate. We'll just cut the cord there where the kidneys and the and the liver are telling the heart to speed up.
Reduce the blood pressure.
We'll just cut it, and then
we'll give you a beta blocker. So we'll then
what
the
happens?
Latest,
right. Huh? What happens then? Does my liver, being unable to now rid itself of this waste, clog up and then blow up?
Well, you're asking entirely too many questions.
I do, and I am.
The doctor will kick you out of your office.
You know why. And so I still respect the science. I understand what you want me to do. I just don't want to do it.
Good for you. Here's another one. After the gold standard in 71, please remind everyone what went down the drain on the last day of President Bill Clinton's when he revoked the financial regulations in place of keeping regular depositors' money and savings away from
Glass
all other investors. Oh, she's talking about Glass-Steagall.
She's talking about the repeal of Glass-Steagall.
That
which
was the last day, wasn't it?
It was indeed the last thing that
You're
Bill Clinton
had.
No, I'm not making that up.
You
that
mean
was
in
the
January
very,
of...
The very last thing Bill Clinton did legislation-wise.
Yeah,
it was to sign the repeal of Glass-Steagall.
Good for Bill.
Which had been strongly voiced by Robert Rubin.
No.
Secretary of the Treasury, went on to be Citibank chairman at some ridiculous sum of money. He went on to preside over that merger. So in 1929, when the stock market crashed, they held this series of hearings in D.C. like they love to do. And they brought everybody in and they said, what caused this? And the bottom line was that the speculators of the nation had access to the people's bank deposits in the form of loans, and so they would borrow the bank deposits of the people and spend them or invest them or, shall I say, gamble them in speculative investments. So Congress said, all right, look, here's what we have to do. We have to separate the investment banks who take money and gamble from the commercial banks that just take deposits and make loans to individuals. So they're going to be two separate things. So if you want to put your money in an investment bank, and then they're going to gamble and speculate, maybe you'll win, maybe you'll lose, well, then that's an investment bank. But if you want to put your money in a commercial bank, then they can't do this. They're not allowed to do any of these other things. They have to stick with this and this alone. A commercial bank is limited to taking deposits, making loans to those depositors, period, end of story. Well, Bill Clinton said, nah, that's antiquated nonsense. Let me deregulate that industry. And so in a rare deregulation attempt, that's exactly what Bill Clinton did. Signed that paperwork repealing Glass-Steagall, which kept commercial banks separate from investment banks. Now the two were allowed to merge together, as J.P. Morgan and Chase did. What did that mean? Well, it meant that now, just as in 1926 and 25, the investment banks had access to the depositors' money. That's what brought on the crisis of 2007-2008. Because they were allowed to take your depositors' money and buy mortgage-backed securities, these securities outside of the realm of borrowing from a depositor and taking a depositor's deposit, expose these banks to risk that should never have been taken with commercial depositors' money and couldn't have been taken had Glass-Steagall not been repealed.
So you, President, you get it repealed? Repeal the repeal?
Yeah, I would absolutely put Glass-Steagall back in, but it's like toothpaste out of the tube.
Well, what are you going to do now?
Now, I guess
you could break up J.P. Morgan Chase.
She would have to.
Yeah.
You would have to. Too big to fail. Every institution that's systemically important has to be chased out. Mm-hmm. The idea that Travelers Insurance can write you an insurance policy and at the same time take deposits from the public through its Citibank arm, that's absurd.
I don't know what Wells Fargo has at the top of their food chain, but every other week they're in some kind of a problem. You know, they catch doing something. They must have a pretty weird culture up there at the top. Every time, every other week, they're fine. They do this, they do that, illegal, playing fines. You know, I don't know who owns that bank anyway.
Warren Buffett?
Really? Warren better get his act together. You guys keep getting caught. You know, there's so
It just reflects the attitude within culture. The banking system,
yeah,
the culture
that whatever they want.
We're all a bunch of suckers, and they're just going to do what they do to make money, and regardless of the impact on you or your life or the banking system, they don't care.
And they were right. They were one of the worst people when it was. Remember when the mortgage thing meltdown?
Yeah, again,
Wells Fargo.
Were
they
that whole thing on Bill Clinton, the repeal of Glass-Steagall. Mm. No question in my mind. Had Glass-Steagall been in place, they could not have done what they did. They couldn't have done it. It would have been illegal to do.
Well, I think a lot of people blame Monica. She had his ear, you know.
I don't think it was his ear.
Just kidding. Iran plans to get around U.S. sanctions. So, you know, this Iran thing, I wish we really knew the whole story because that would be a whole movie in its own, right? What's really going on. But they are getting more...
You realize we seized that money.
Yeah, they took the money. Right?
I want to really bring that up because I've heard so many people suggest we gave the Iranians $180 billion that was our money.
You mean under O?
Yeah.
Right?
O only gave them back their money.
Oh, that we took from them.
That's right.
Oh, good.
So when they seized the hostages.
Oh, we
well,
yeah.
Yeah. You remember that whole.
Kind of.
Yeah, that whole thing.
Which
the thing?
When was this?
Jimmy Carter.
Oh, you're not talking about the hostages on Reagan's inauguration day, are you?
Yes, I am.
Really?
Yeah.
It goes way back?
We seized every asset the Iranians had in the United States.
Oh, did we now?
Private, public, didn't matter. If there was money
no
here.
No wonder they don't like
and
us.
They were a bit upset, to say the least.
So in 1980 we did this.
Yeah. Okay. Ronald Reagan, tough man.
Yeah.
He said,
Inauguration day.
You're going to take our hostages. We're going to take your money.
Wow.
And so they seized all the Iranian assets in the United States.
Okay.
And held them that entire time.
How much was it?
Well, apparently $180 billion. Now, I'd love to see an accounting.
Wouldn't it?
But that is the way that, of course, the Democrats are selling it. Now, the way that most Americans view it is we took it fair and square. It was ours. Now we're giving it back. That must mean we're giving our money. That's kind of the way I view it,
so
too.
So then O gave it back, and then President Trump wants to take it back again?
Sure. We should have held it in the first
place. We
should have never given it
back. So what Iran is doing...
It should have been what is known in legal parlance as liquidated damages. You took our hostages, you caused us this national crisis, and we're going to seize your deposits here as liquidated damages.
And there's more sanctions going to be imposed in a month, right?
Yep.
Targeting Iran's oil sector.
Yep.
And they were suspended under the nuclear deal
yep.
that they signed, and the president is now saying, I don't want to do that one anymore. And so Iran is out there saying, okay, well, good luck, because we're just going to start selling everything that we have with other currencies, bilateral trades. We don't need your stinking...
We're not going to take your dollars.
We don't need
anymore.
Your stinking dollars.
Yeah. And what really bothers me is that Germany and France...
They're doing
it,
right?
They're complicit. Yeah, they're helping them do it.
Yeah.
And Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're helping them. They're all like, okay, we'll help you find a way to thwart these American sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
We're setting up an alternative to the SWIFT system. So that we can give you money without going through the American-dominated SWIFT system. This is really the end or the beginning of the end of dollar supremacy. There's no doubt. We've talked about it now for a decade. I think 10 years ago, it was a little premature to suggest that something was going to unseat the dollar as the world's reserve currency. But here in 2018, it looks a little different.
Oh,
to
yeah,
me.
Boy. There's people talking about it.
We're weakening up there.
I think it's in the wind. But, you know, the dollar.
Well, I hope they don't talk too loud. You know, because we'll liberate them if we have to.
The dollar ain't people. They've got to have a plan, though. They're not going to let this thing go after 200 years, are they?
I think their plan was the SDR.
But I think that's still going to happen, isn't it?
And it may.
Yeah.
But the point is that they have their foot so deeply entrenched in the SDR mm-hmm. that SDR, a move to SDR, while it looks like it replaces the dollar, in fact cements the dollar's relationship since it makes up the bulk
of the SDR. Of the SDR, right? What is it, probably 80% or
60, I think, is the number.
And SDR, folks, is, what is it, Andrew?
Special Drawing Right International Monetary Fund.
I've been reading there's going to be a lot of third world currencies that are going to start...
falling like cryptos?
But pinning themselves to the SDR rather than the dollar, which is pretty much the same thing.
It is the same thing, yes.
Like you say, yeah.
Yeah, the only thing
maybe
is...
it'll just make them feel better.
The SDR is a partnership between the euro, the British pound, the Japanese yen...
The boys.
The yuan, exactly. So here we're going to let these four currencies as one dominate the world's financial markets. Mm-hmm. And they're going to replace the nasty dollar. Mm-hmm. Don't be absurd. The dollar's the primary component of the SDR. You can't have an SDR without dollars. Mm-hmm. So they're not doing anything to displace the dollar with the SDR, except involving the others, cutting them in on the action, which I think in order to save the system, the Dollar Inc. boys are more than willing to do, as they've done in the past. So the folks that run the dollar also run the euro. Wouldn't have any trouble getting them in.
Yeah, well, you know, the people that run around and blogging about the dollar, they don't really look at the small print like you do.
No, they don't.
You know, they don't want to talk about really what's really going on, right?
They just want to spin and paint the big picture, and typically it ties back into their whatever they're suggesting as an investment vehicle.
Sure, yeah. Well, I guess we've just defended as many people as you can in one show. So
That's right. Andy at andygoss.com.
Just email him, right?
Equal opportunity hater, yes. I don't discriminate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we'll go have some lunch. How about you? Are you going to lunch?
Is it lunchtime?
It's lunchtime. Well, it's 12:30 there on the East Coast, man.
That's not lunchtime.
What is it?
Lunch is midday. Midday's like 3 o'clock.
Well, that's because you work till...
Hey, you know. That's
right.
Yes.
All right, kiddo, give folks your number there. And
okay, if you'd like to talk to me today,
800-468-2646,
800-468-2646. If I can't pick up right away, I promise to call you back.
Mm-hmm. 800-468-2646.
Yes.
Mr. G, thanks. We had a good time today.
Thank you, Patrick.
All right. Andrew Goss, we love you. Stay there a second, Andrew, if you would, for one sec, or you can go to the little boy's room and come back. I'm going to wrap up the show. Isn't it great how I tell Andrew what he can and cannot do? Just kidding. It's October 3rd. We're going to see you tomorrow. We're going to have a couple shows probably, but one for sure is an interesting MD, PhD type, and we're going to really dig into the potential health benefits of miracle marijuana, wacky tobacco, marijuana, and or hemp, better known as hemp. We're going to do that tomorrow, and I think we're going to have somebody else too. So we'll see you tomorrow. I appreciate your ongoing support, and I feel quite blessed to be able to do my living and make our little house payment here and buy Doodles and I food and stuff by doing this show every day, and it's just an honor to be here. We appreciate your ongoing support, putting up with me, and having some fun, and thank you for considering our website to look at some of the products that we promote. That's how we make a living. We get a commission on the things we talk about. Other than that, it's all free, 2,500 over podcast. Just put in something in our search engine, and you're going to find people. I get it all the time. People write me. They say, why don't you interview so-and-so? And I put their name in our little search engine on the top right of One Radio Network. Boom. Looks like oftentimes we've interviewed them one or two times that I don't even remember. So do that, and you'll find a lot of people that you want to hear from. Or you can also put in things like high blood pressure, cancer, detox, and find a lot of really cool stuff. Some very good people that we've had the pleasure of talking to over nearly, working on 11 years now. I'll see you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. I love you all very much. Thanks again, and may the blessings be.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.